Folks, here we are, episode 131 of Bat and Spider.
Yeah.
The days are short, the nights are long here, but to help us get through this week, we watched a movie called The Wild Angels from 1966. And a lot of our listeners have it on their watch list already, but the only person, according to Letterboxd, who did watch this already was one, Charles Forsman. Whom I have with me on the show tonight. Yeah, so it works out. It works out.
Funny how that works out. Yeah. Man, I mean, I still can't get over the cast of this. This is a Hollywood who's who.
I didn't even know. I mean, we're going to get into it at the bottom of the hour, but Bruce Dern, I didn't know that was Bruce Dern.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah, I know. He's
maybe it's because I watched it on my phone.
Oh.
Like somebody cramming for a test.
Well, could you still make out every swastika that appeared in the movie?
Man. Boy.
Man.
Yeah, we're gonna be getting into that too.
Yeah, good to be back, Dale. Rest in peace to after in a couple of days, the last episode of the Hammer House of Horror, our sister show will be airing on Saturday. So
yeah,
everyone get out your hankies. We did it. 13.
Yeah. Apps. Check us out. Last episode of the series. And it was a good one. It was a good run. 13 strong, strong weeks that we went
out on a bang.
But also that opens up some freedoms to do more Ko-fi apps, which we really, you know, we need to do. We need to do that.
Oh,
I think.
We got some ideas.
We got some ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, Chuck, geez, let's not air out all of our personal show notes on the air. What's going on? What's cooking?
I don't know.
Is it, what's the temperature up there? Cause it's cold down here. Are you part of the Arctic blanket?
Well, currently as we record this, it is a 39 degrees Fahrenheit outside.
Wow.
So it's getting there.
Yeah, it's 38 here right now.
Oh, holy cow.
In North Carolina.
What?
Yeah.
Gee whiz.
Yeah, so that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, I did look at the 10-day forecast earlier, and I saw some snow, which I was bummed about. It's probably not going to be much.
Well, I'm excited.
It's still a little early, but
I'm excited for you though.
I'm not excited. I got to fill up that gas can for the snow thrower, Dale.
Ooh. Now, Chuck, is this one of those gas cans where it's like half oil, half gas?
Oh, no.
Is that how one of these snow throwers work?
No. Thank Christ.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
They knew what they were doing when they made that whole thing up. Like,
they knew.
Oh, so we're going to make a machine that they have to mix some complicated mixture of oil and gas together. But they only do it every 12 months, right? So they're going to forget. They're going to lose these instructions unless they're a maniac and they keep everything in order. But most people, they're just going to destroy this machine in 2 years.
They keep their nails and their screws in those jelly jars that are screwed up.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the lid is screwed into the wood.
Yeah.
We know.
Yeah, their workbench is pristine. There's no dust on that workbench.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've got a shop vac hooked up to their saw. So the saw doesn't even hit the floor, you know?
Oh my
right
God!
Up.
Yeah,
sickos.
Oh God,
who do they think they are?
Crazy, absolutely crazy.
We know your poo smells. Just relax. You're not better than us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I did not get to watch a lot of movies, and I don't know why. What was I doing, Dale? Was I playing video games?
Well, I mean, that's always fun. If you were, no
I did
pressure.
Play a little bit of the Atari 50 collection, which has been all up in the news on Atari 50.
I tell you, our Discord has been lit up with Atari 50 talk. between three of us, namely, but there others have joined in.
Yeah. It's a cool collection. The folks over at Digital Eclipse, I've noticed them recently. Like, I know they just did the Ninja Turtles collection, which is equally fantastic as this Atari collection, because they don't just like make sure the games are running good like they did back in the day and they're accurate and everything, but they put a lot of care into having supplemental stuff, whether it's like documents from the, you know, like in the Turtles ones, there's like actual like level design papers that the guys were like, you know, using a pencil and designing the levels, stuff like that. They even have like the comic book covers for the Turtle stuff and all kinds of things. But the Atari 51 is almost like it's almost like they're putting out CD-ROMs, Dale. It's almost like these are like early 90s CD-ROMs that were going to revolutionize the industry. And everyone's like, oh my God, what have they done? Taking old video games and putting them on a storyline. You can click on stuff and watch interviews with the creators who made the game and look at old box art and all this stuff. I feel like I'm making fun of it, but it's actually really cool.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So I bought it and I went through the whole timeline like pretty quick. It's like 100 games. I didn't play them all, but it was really fun to just like click through it and just sort of like trail off into little sections and yeah, it's pretty cool. I think $40 is a good price. I don't know. This is not a video game, Dale Show. I don't know why I'm.
Wow. It's only $40. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I paid 40. If it was like 60, I would have told him to pound sand, but 40s
right,
worth it. It's a lot of games, you know.
Yeah,
but I was happy that I feel like I'm just repeating all the Discord stuff, but I bought this stupid Atari controller a few months ago because they did that Atari VCS Indiegogo thing a couple of years ago, and I saw this controller that they made. It's like modern controller, but it's the old school joystick. And I was like, oh, I'm going to snag one of those because it'll probably work on PC. And it kind of does. It does. So I was able to play some games on there. The cool thing that this has is the joystick spins. So like games Tempest, you can use it like I forget the name of it, but like on arcades, so they would have the scroll wheel thing.
Yeah, this like a scroll knob that goes left or right. Yeah.
So that's pretty cool to have that.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's fun. What did I play? I think I got my brother addicted to Vampire Survivors.
Nice. So good job.
Zombie Congrats. Eyes, so there's that. I don't know. What about, did you play any games, Dale?
I didn't play any games, Chuck, but I finally got around, luckily, to getting to enjoy Weird, the Al Yankovic story.
Oh yeah.
In all of its glory. Now Roku technically doesn't make it easy to watch it on all devices, but luckily my Samsung Smart TV, you can download the Roku channel app and watch it there.
Oh, okay.
The UI is complete crap when you download the app, but can watch this movie. I got to watch it not, you know, on my iPad or on my phone. So that was good. The bad right off the top was, I mean, there was probably like 8 ad breaks during this movie.
Oh, boo.
Which is super depressing.
Huh.
And I get it because, you know, you're not paying Roku a penny for anything coming from Roku. I guess technically you could be, but still. You know, it was kind of a bummer to have to deal with that in a sense, because I would have happily rented it if I could have.
Yeah.
Or, you know, bought it digitally.
That's
or whatever,
weird. Like, you can't just rent it. Can you?
Yeah. No. You can't.
See, that's,
you can't.
That's lame. It's there's no choice.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I love this movie, and it was made for It's made for the Al fans who get it. You know what I mean? who get it.
Not those fake ass Al fans who.
Right. That are surface level. Who knows what they're expecting? Yeah. Surface level Al fans who are giving it less than 4 stars.
Surface level Al fans who never watched the Saturday morning Weird Al show and knows how amazing that was. Did you watch that, Dale, when it came out?
I didn't watch all of them because it, you know, was I in my 20s when it came out? But
no,
I did make time. Yeah, no, it came out like super late. It was like late 90s. Are you looking it up right now, Chuck? I hope you are, because I don't see your hands moving. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, I had an absolute magical time, and there was these tinges of whack, you know, the comedy wasn't, it was like this flavor of comedy that reminded me of like The State and Wet Hot American Summer. It's like comedy, and then there's, you know, it's like it spins off into funny comedy.
Yeah.
Funny comedy. I don't know what I'm trying, if there's a name for it, but.
The fall of 1997. So I was 15 when it was on the air.
Yeah. No, I was 17, Chuck. I wasn't.
But anyway.
You know, I wasn't watching Saturday morning cartoon. No, I don't know what. Oh, you know, I was probably at that point.
Banging chicks, you know?
Banging chicks, and then, you know, bagging them again in the morning. Now, I had a job where I washed dishes.
Before the chicks came over. Sorry.
Yeah, I had to get up early to do that. I didn't clean my room, but I hid my Weird Al and my porn mags.
I hope Patty doesn't see my Weird Al CDs. I don't know why this scenario is cracking me up. I'm so sorry. We're not that kind of show. This is not that.
No. No, that's base level. We're not base level.
Sorry.
I don't know. I just wasn't watching, you know, Saturday morning cartoons by that point. Why do I have to explain myself? I don't have to explain myself. Anyway, watch the show. Watch the movie.
Yeah, I know. I got to watch it. I'm having the same issue though. Like I checked. I use a Google TV thing to stream. There's no Roku app on there. So.
Oh God. Jeez.
I don't know. Apparently you can stream it from the browser to a TV. So I might try that, but you know, Dale, when I'm in that chair,
try pausing.
What am I going to do?
Try pausing. Try fast forwarding in a browser. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah. So, and the commercials thing is not, you know, I mean, if this was Tubi, I'd understand, but come on. I can't watch a new movie.
Yeah,
I can't just pay $5 and rent it. Come on.
And this is, it's, I mean, it's feature film. Like the amount of guest appearances in this movie, star studded.
I curse me, cause I'm going to bring up the dreaded word again. I did watch one scene on, is that fucking app that I talk about all the time with the butter?
Plex?
The butter, the people eating butter.
TikTok.
On TikTok, a scene from the movie came into my feed and I watched most of it. And it was one that actually you mentioned off air of Jables playing Wolfman Jack at the pool party. And that was like, I'm guessing that was like the big celebrity extravaganza. Cause I was like looking in the background. Yeah. It's like all these people playing all these celebrities from the eight. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta watch it.
Oh man, so good, man. Oh God, Conan O'Brien plays Andy Warhol.
Oh my God,
in it.
Oh my God,
it's just it's a great scene. It's a great scene. But yeah, I mean the movie was fantastic, and I can't believe it's real. Like I just smiling the whole time watching it, and it was just, you know, you just can't believe it's real. And my youngest son watched it with us, and he gave it a lower score because Weird Al is in the movie, but he doesn't play Weird Al. Somebody else plays Weird Al in the movie.
Yeah.
And like in his brain, he just couldn't fathom.
I can understand that.
It wasn't funny to him. Yeah. It wasn't anything. I was like, oh, it's, you know, that's sometimes what they do in comedy or whatever. But he was beside himself. 3.5 stars out of 5 from Reed.
I'm a little bit with Reed there, because it's like, part of me is like, why didn't Weird Al just play himself? Especially since it's not a serious like biopic. Like, he could have just played himself and it would have been hilarious. Like, you know, it's like watching Clifford, my second favorite movie of all time. With what's his name playing a little boy. It's hilarious.
Martin Short.
Yeah. Playing a 10-year-old. It's hilarious. But I'm also not like a big, I know it's blasphemy. What's Harry Potter? I have no affinity for this actor. Sorry if that's cursing me. So I'm not like super hyped on watching him play Weird Al. But I'll watch. I'm surprised we didn't do it for the show. We probably should have.
Huh? I know what. Yeah, we should have. Jesus.
But I knew so it was sloppy. Super special to you, and I didn't want to make it weird.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks for that. You're right.
Some movies are sacred. I probably, you know, you just gotta.
Yeah.
You're going to have your moment with them. Have it be a personal thing, you know?
Right. We don't need to do it for the show. We don't need to talk about it and try to convince people to like what we like.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's true. It's absolutely true.
Dale, the first episode of the Weird Al show, the Saturday morning show that Weird Al did in 1997, aired on my birthday. So maybe that's why I love it so much.
I remember this show being
blowing my mind, like legit being... like asking, why is this on Saturday morning television?
Yeah, I thought the same thing when it premiered, because I remember seeing it and liking it and being like, wow, is there room in Saturday morning? I know it's still like on regular TV. It's still, you know, cable TV existed still back then. There was no internet watching, but I just remember like, wow, is this of the time? Is this the time of Al still?
Yeah. It seemed weird to us because we had like sort of like grown out of our normal Al phase probably by then, and I hadn't grown up enough to be like, no, I do like Weird Al, and I'm not hiding my CDs in my underwear drawer anymore, you know?
Right. But it's like, are we the target audience for that? Because we're getting older.
I know. Yeah, totally. A kid, like someone who's actually like 10 years old watching this, would they be like, this is cool? Or would they be like, can we change the channel?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great, Dale. I'm happy you liked it. I got to make time and watch this thing, which I will.
Yeah.
I will. As soon as I figure out this app. Do you think Roku sales are through the roof because of the Weird Al movie? You think everyone's like, how do I watch this movie?
Yeah. I mean, they're literally going to, you know, like Best Buy and Walmart to probably get a stick
shelves,
to plug in, because they don't know how else to do it.
Shelves are clear. I just looked. And it's Best Buy put up a sign that due to Weird Al, we have no Rokus. So.
Right.
Yeah. Backed up.
More back in stock soon. But they can't tell
you
when.
If you have a Roku, do you have to watch ads? Probably.
That's a good question. Because is there a Roku Premium? You know, who knows?
If only there was a way to find this out. Are you so annoyed that I'm still talking about this?
We do have to move on.
I did watch another Heroic Bloodshed movie, which I'd like to touch on real quick. If you don't mind.
Please. Please do.
I watched Just Heroes from 1989. This one was co-directed by John Woo with another fellow named Wu Ma. This does not have Chow Yun Fat in it, but there's some talented folks in this. And it's a, you know, it's another like three friends who like get caught up in stuff and triad gang stuff. And this one's a little more lighthearted and fun, and it's super, the way I described it was like watching a soap opera on fast forward. because it's just like the amount of melodrama happening, and it's just at a quick pace, just the twists and turns of like who's double crossing who and who's sleeping with who, and why did that girl, why did I not be with that girl and she's married to that guy, and it's just all over the place, and it's fun, it's super entertaining, but then it's like cut up with John Woo gunfights, and it's you're just like, yeah, okay, all right,
right. It's like 30 something with gunfights.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Kind of. Yeah. And the weirdest thing in this is though, is that it references heavily, like I think A Better Tomorrow was a big movie, or those two movies at the time were huge, because they have a character in this. He's like a young guy who idolizes Chow Yun-Fat's character from A Better Tomorrow. And he finally gets to be like part of a gunfight scene in this movie. So he like does the thing. He's like, oh, he literally says, oh, A Better Tomorrow. And he starts hiding guns in flower pots, just like Chow Yun-Fat did in the one scene. And he like, I think he wears a jacket and sunglasses like Chow Yun-Fat. It's super weird. It's like a weird album. Like it's like totally like jumping out of the movie to like make this reference. Yeah, it's wacky. These movies are too fun.
That's cool.
They're just too fun. But yeah, that's my update. Hopefully I'll have them all done by next week. That's the plan. Let's see.
Fun.
Yeah, but should we move on to our main feature topic, Dale?
Let's get into The Wild Angels.
Wild Angels from 1966, directed by Roger Corman. Wild Angels. I don't know if this, it's definitely not the first biker movie, but it is, I think it's the kind of the first counterculture biker movie. And pretty early on, 66, you know, the hippies were not in full steam yet. But what we're watching here is less of a, it was less, there was no plot to this movie really. And that was a loop I wasn't expecting. Because you're kind of just like with a biker gang in Southern California, just doing what they do. And it's kind of in the spirit of what they do and what they want their lives to be. Just freewheeling, riding their bikes, getting loaded, messing with the man. But unfortunately, the man messes with them, so they have to strike back and stuff. And it's, you know, if there was a plot, it's sort of following the death of one of their members and the adventures they go on to have a funeral for him, you know, without getting harassed, I guess. I don't know. But come on, these guys are bringing it all in themselves. We'll get into it, Dale.
Yeah, sure.
I can't believe we're going to talk about bikers, but we are. I couldn't pick two more unqualified people to talk about bikers.
I do not feel comfortable. I do not feel comfortable with what we're about to get into. No.
Yeah. Wild Angels. Yeah.
Yeah. You said, you know, it doesn't really have a plot. It doesn't really have a plot. And I mean, I can just tell you, throughout the movie, I don't know if I've ever felt a greater unease.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watching these characters mingle and interact.
Yes.
On screen together. I can't get over that they're a group that sticks together through thick and thin after what I saw. On screen.
There's a lot of contradictions in these characters. And I think that's kind of true to what these folks are like. You know, I've never hung out with bikers. I've definitely hung out with people that gave me that feeling that you have, that unease. And sort of like, I'm not sure what's going to happen from minute to minute in this situation. And just, you know... And it's just sort of that, like you're like, just imagine being in a, I don't know, like a room with characters that you're just, you're just not sure what everyone's thinking, and you're supposed to be having fun, but there's just an unease in the air, and it's just, the unease is deafening. And if you're a certain sort of person like me with high anxiety, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
It's rough to try and hang out with folks like that. I don't know.
Yeah, man. That's, if anything, there's no plot to this movie. It's just for, I don't know if it was even, probably at the time, it wasn't made to make the watcher feel as uncomfortable as it probably made us feel uncomfortable. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, I think that's what they were trying to do, you know, cause the,
I think by the end I was just, as much as the movie seemed to try to be about Blues, who's Peter Fonda, he was like so listless and aimless throughout the entire movie. Like he didn't, if anybody didn't have a plot in this movie, it was our leader.
Perez.
Like he couldn't.
Yeah, no.
He didn't have a plan. And maybe that's part of the crisis. Like maybe that's part of his crisis. For being appointed leader of this gang, he made no decisions. It's almost like he didn't want to be in charge. You know what I mean? But it wasn't even that. It was like he wasn't anti being in charge. He just wasn't.
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, that's the thing. I think that's. And maybe you know, the story is like this guy Charles B. Griffith is credited with writing it, but Peter Bogdanovich has said, gone on the record that he rewrote about 80% of the script.
oh, wow.
But I think, what you're describing though, I think they did a good job. Like I didn't like actively love this movie, but I think it really does paint that uneasy picture of what it is like in with these folks. And about like, Blues' leadership, like he is the president, everyone follows his lead, what he says goes, but also they're living this lifestyle of not, you know, anti-authority. They don't want anyone telling them what to do. So it gets weird within that when he has to make decisions. And I think all those silent scenes of everyone looking at Blues while he's thinking and staring off into the night air is him wrestling with that idea of being an authority within a non-authority situation, you know?
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
But it is also okay. Like boring to watch Peter Fonda stare, I think. Is that a controversial statement?
Okay. Maybe for people who, you nailed it. I see your point, and I think that's good. I think it's a great point, but also, it was boring watching him be so lifeless.
I also think you could totally call bullshit on what I said because I'm not convinced that that's what they were going for. But
yeah,
that's,
you're helping convince me.
You know, because the whole thing is just like it's just them. You know, the only time they like really take action is when. What was Bruce Dern's character's name? I gotta get these characters.
Loser.
Like the whole movie starts with them. Hey, we found your bike. It's in this village somewhere, you know, outside of the city, whatever. So it's them going down there and trying to get the bike back, but they end up just beating up some Latinos and then not getting the bike. Oh, and stealing a motorcycle cop's car. Mike's stealing a motorcycle from a cop. Yeah. And then the cops shoot the loser in the back. He ends up in the hospital.
Yeah,
they break him out, but he's had heavy surgery. These idiots, they think they can just take him out of the hospital situation. He's going to be fine. He dies within 10 minutes of getting back to HQ.
Oh my God. he totally needed to remain on life support at the hospital.
And then the rest of it is just them
it was bad.
Setting up a funeral up in Idlewild loser's hometown, I guess. And
yeah,
you know, torturing a preacher, getting a preacher out in his pajamas to do the proceedings, which they didn't really want him to do anyway, it seemed like.
Yeah. Yeah, really. It's like they made the decision to do that, and then they went back on that decision like mid
decision. Like the one girl got the preacher there, and I don't know what they promised him, but that preacher, I guess he's in an impossible situation when in a church full of bikers, and he's going to go stand next to
Feared for his life.
He's going to go stand above a Nazi flag and do us, you know, say some words about this young man dead in the coffin. Wearing a hat with a swastika on it. But then Blues just stands up and he's like, fuck you, man. Like, it's all the same, you know, and he does his famous speech.
Yeah.
Of we just don't want to be hassled by the man. We just want to do what we want to do, you know. Which I guess I was reading was referenced in a lot of other movies.
A couple songs.
Yeah.
Like a couple songs from different time periods.
Yeah. Maybe that's, it did sound familiar when he said that speech. Maybe that's why, because I'd seen it somewhere else. But I think it's a tough movie. I was expecting more of a biker exploitation outlaw, like bikers having fun. Yeah. You know, screwing with people and partying and having sex and doing drugs. But it was a lot more, I think it was a lot more, I don't think it made it more entertaining to watch, but I think it was a lot more, I think maybe Bogdanovich was trying to be more insightful. And I think maybe Corman was trying to make an exploitation movie. And I think they were kind of at odds there. And I think that's why you get sort of an uneasy finished product.
Mm.
That's my theory.
Okay. I like, that's good.
And I know, you know,
go
ahead.
No, and it's, I mean, maybe that's, if that's it, then mission accomplished. I just didn't give it enough credit because it's it's like from 1966 and they're trying this like new thing out. They're trying this new, this having a motorcycle gang on film. You know what I mean? So I didn't put that much faith maybe into the finished product.
Yeah, I mean,
and it just made me uneasy for different reasons.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
it's also like, I mean, I know Corman's a legend, but he was cheap, and like it shows. Mm-hmm. Like there were like, I'm not a movie director, but there were times in this movie where I was like, wow, a close up there would have been really good to like when Blue stands up in the church, like it would have been good to get some close up shots of him reacting to the sermon or whatever the preacher's saying before he stands up, because the way it happens, he just stands up and there's no tension or buildup of suspense where you're watching Blues start to get annoyed, like stuff like that. It's just like, oh, there's just shots missing. Cause it's just like, you know, I know Corman's just like, you know, all right, one take, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to get anything else. Perfect. Let's go.
Yeah. Right. Right. And along with Blues, I think there was something missing between Blues and Mike, because Mike is a girl in this movie,
Nancy Sinatra,
but
she can't act.
She really can't. And also you can't get a read on, like, Mike is questioning Blues's place.
Yeah.
She's questioning every decision he makes, but also she's like pointing out what he's not doing. And Blues, it's like, it doesn't want to be bothered with any of it. But like, I wonder, watching Mike question all this, it's like, where all is all this coming from? Because it's, I'm not sensing what Mike is sensing. Mike is obviously sensing something in Blues that, something's up.
Yeah. I think,
but I don't get a sense of anything.
I think, oh really? You know? Yeah. I mean, I think she, if anything, she's closest to my frustrations of just like looking at the situation. You know, she's with Blues, you know, she's his girl, but she sees all these signs of, oh, am I really his girl? Like, you know, within this like super misogynist setup here, we should say, but
yeah,
she's like constantly questioning like the hierarchy and like, are we together? Am I your girl? And so she'll just straight up ask him and he's just like, I don't know, you know, and shit like that. So it's like really frustrating, which I think is like, I don't know, maybe I'm giving Bogdanovich too much credit, but I think that's what he was trying to show is that it's like, there's, you know, there's no one actually leading this crew of outlaws when they just want to do what they want to do. And there's no real hierarchy, even though there kind of is, you know?
So it's, Mike is like, I get that. And maybe Mike is, you know, finally realizing Mike is unsettled with that fact. Yeah. And Mike would like appreciate some sort of direction or, you know, something.
Just someone being like, yeah, let's be boyfriend, girlfriend. Like just that, you know, she wasn't even getting that, you know?
Right. And I could sense that, but I'm like, once you get into a place where your blues, you know, significant other or whatever, like you need the, you know, I don't know. You got to stop questioning. I don't know. Like, you need to accept.
When you're living with a biker gang. Yeah. I mean, you gotta realize you're pushing buttons. The situation you're in, like things are not going to be, this is not high school, madam.
Exactly. Like Mike is like pushing buttons just by asking these questions. And if I'm in Mike's position as like a de facto girlfriend of the leader, whatever that means, you know, cause he's like with other women in the movie, it's like, Mike, you're already there. Like you can't, whatever you do, you're going to get slapped around or you're going to get, you know, killed or you're going to have to leave or I don't know.
Yeah.
I think by the end, man, I was just so like incredibly uneasy with Geisha's, like loser's former lover. Geisha's like position and all this and how she gets gang raped at the end there and shit like that. How by the end, it's just like, it's okay. And Geisha's like, oh, that's just bike living. You know, she's like,
but I think that's what it was like in these gangs. You know, I think that was probably true to the situation, you know?
Yeah. Right. Maybe it's just too real. It's like when I read, it's like, what's that David Lappin book?
Stray Bullets?
Stray Bullets, yeah. Maybe it's just like too real for me.
Yeah.
Like reading Stray Bullets, as good as it is, maybe it like for something there is like.
Yeah.
Blocking me from.
I did love Geisha. Yeah. Diane, that was Diane Ladd. She was awesome in this movie. I thought she.
She was good.
She was my favorite performance in this. And it.
But like fucking Frankenstein, you know, like blues, fucking do something, man. Like somebody yell out, Geisha, yell out, get some attention. Like, why is, I don't know, like maybe that's the problem. Yeah. Why is all this happening?
Well, they drugged her before they raped her.
They drugged her, but like three people over.
Oh, I know.
Who didn't. Gang rape, you know, why aren't they like, it just sucks that it's all part of the,
oh yeah, it's disgusting. I know.
It's like, oh, they're just over there doing their thing with Geisha, you know? It's like, fuck.
And fucking Blues is like sleeping with the other girl, you know, like we should say they're partying in a church. They're going crazy partying,
destroying the church,
bongo drums. And they tied up the preacher and, what was the drug that they were like? Remember, Blues gets mad at someone for, was he doing heroin? And he got mad at that guy in the desert.
I don't know because he.
And then he does it at the end, right?
Yeah, he like inhales a bunch of it or something.
I feel like that the drug thing was, I don't know. Maybe that was like another thing that was sort of disappeared in editing. Where like.
Yeah.
I think Blues is supposed to be having like some sort of crisis about the drugs in the scene, man. You know, like, oh, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't do horse. But at the end he makes the decision just to do it and say, fuck it. Like, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I could see that. Know. Yeah. Be- because I mean, because the dramatic way he like rips it out and he yeah. like huffs it, like he like he's crouching down and he huffs it, but and he like leans back while he's doing it.
Yeah,
it's like maybe it, all in that action. It's just like, you know what?
Yeah,
F it.
Yeah,
like the amount of for like this being, you know, proto Sons of Anarchy, the amount of bongo playing while they party is just inspiring. Like I would probably be into partying more if somebody was there playing bongos.
And some of honestly. The guys and gals were dedicated to dancing at these parties. Like the amount of dancing going on.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The amount of energy being exerted. I was like, wow. It was like they're
yeah,
into
it was
this.
Like it was like a Gidget.
Yeah.
And like dance party on the
yeah,
beach.
Yeah, totally. It was like dance were... party dancing, but like crazy bikers like who. You don't know
but
what they're
with like,
do.
Yeah, swastikas.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. Like being loose cannons, yeah. every single one of them.
We should touch on the fucking swastikas. Cause they do start out this movie with a loser at his job in an oil rig and Dick Miller's there as his boss.
Yeah.
And he's like trying to give it to these young, he's like, man, if we used to kill people like you, wore stuff like that. And,
yeah.
The bikers like give him shit, you know, because Dick Miller's character was probably in the war. So he's like, can't believe these young kids wearing this stuff. And that's exactly why they're wearing it. You know, I did a little research because I was like, what's the whole thing? Is it a white supremacist thing? And there definitely is that. Like I don't think the Hells Angels still don't let black people into the Hells Angels to this day.
Uh-huh.
There's definitely an element of that, but I think it was more, not to excuse it, but I think it was more their version of punk rock. Like they're going to piss off society and their dads.
They're going to piss.
If they put
okay
iron crosses and swastikas on, they're going to make everyone around them angry. And it was just,
I got it.
It was less about like, you know, I feel stupid excusing it because it's like, like
no yeah no but I like the
we're so
the,
far removed you but know, you think like
the research
20 thing. Years after like this is 66 so it's like 20 years after the war you know, could you imagine that like being so like
yeah.
dedicated to pissing off everyone around you
I know
to wear a swastika. 20 years you know the majority of people are you know just went through World War II you know it's like you know could you right. imagine like walking
and,
around with
and
that
and their sons
yeah
their
sons yeah,
like
yeah
they're yeah it's like one generation
yeah,
like
exactly.
they you know these war heroes like the babies were born in the houses that the war bought them
totally.
You know what I mean and yeah. they're already like wearing the Iron Cross and shit yeah. like that yeah it's fucking bad news
yeah
bad news
but yeah I wasn't
yeah,
prepared
wow.
for the amount of swastikas and the flag like they
man.
Had so many Nazi flags in their like headquarters I was like man this is out of control guys
it's like they're like draping his coughing
yeah.
loser's coffin in it as the procession down the road and shit
yeah.
crazy
crazy I did read that Bruce Dern and Diane Ladd were together while they filmed this they were real life lovers and they played lovers
that's cool
yeah yeah Diane Ladd god she was fucking awesome
yeah how oh man how about that scene when they get, like, it was this whole more unease, like, just feeding into the unease. But when they finally brought Loser, I don't even know what building they're in, if they're in the hideout or what, but they get him home from the hospital and they wake these babies up out of their bed so they could put Loser in the toddler's bed.
Yeah.
There's kids, like, screaming off camera. And this lady is like begging this gang to like please leave the room so she could get these kids to sleep.
Yeah,
but that's not the life.
I know.
This is not the like it's not the kids' room anymore. It belongs to every one of those bikers. There's 21 bikers in that room.
Yeah.
And they're all like standing around Loser in that bed.
I was yeah.
It was heartbreaking.
I couldn't handle that. Just the noise of the crying kids like in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And just like having this room stuffed with bikers and there's a guy dying in the bed. I was like, man,
yeah,
this is not a safe environment for a child.
I know. It's just unreal. It was unreal.
Yeah.
It was unreal.
What else is there?
The whole, but the whole parade music when they're walking Loser from the church, walking his coffin to the graveyard. If I could have one song on loop my entire rest of my life, it would be that procession music. I was in love.
I have to go back to funeral procession music. There's a lot of good music in this movie. I love it's like there, early fuzz guitar.
Yeah.
Rock and roll, just like instrumental stuff. It's so awesome.
And it's almost like betrayed what you were seeing on screen.
Yeah.
It was like this was like music from the 60s.
Yeah.
But what you were seeing on screen with the biker gang and stuff just felt like a whole lot dirtier than that, a whole lot worse than that.
Yeah, totally.
So that was like a jamming together of, you know, because it's 66, so it's, you know, it's not like Easy Rider.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yeah. And the one scene that did make me laugh quite a bit is when they go to like the mortician and bring Loser's body to him. And the guy's like, he got a death certificate. Handsome.
Yeah.
The guy, he's like laughing at it. Like, where'd you get this? Like, look. And they're like, is this a problem? And he's like, no problem. Yeah. I just want to know what kind of heat I'm getting or something like that. Like,
yeah.
I love that how did they get a forged death certificate? That's insane.
I know. He's like, it looks like this was signed by a vet or something like that.
Oh,
he's
yeah. But I love that they knew a guy like, oh, we got to call the death certificate guy and get a fake death certificate. Like, I guess because they don't want to draw any heat from the man. So they got to do their own funeral. I don't know. God, that's wild. I did. And I got to say, there's a part of me, I like a good rebel, but that kid who threw the rock at the bikers at the funeral at the end, I was like, ooh. I was kind of on his side. I was like, yeah, fuck these Nazis. Mm-hmm. I might've thrown a rock or two.
Yep.
Get out of my town, you fucking maniacs.
Yeah, man.
Ugh.
I just love how the decision was made right then and there. Like, we're going to fuck these townspeople up and we're going to drop the coffin. Now, like, our priority has shifted into like fighting with these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Blues is just like, all right, what you like, you, you turds, you know, it's like,
I did like the other, or Blues, like, he's like, I'm done. Everybody, like, everyone's burning rubber out of there because the police sirens, and Blues is just staying there with the shovel. He's like, nah, I'm going to bury my friend. I'll probably get arrested or whatever. I thought that was a good ending. But, oh, speaking of.
Mike is like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah, yeah. But like, and that whole funeral procession, speaking of cutting corners, I would have just killed for like one or two shots of an old men's faces in the town watching these bikers come through with swastikas on, like, just to see the disappointment on their faces or the anger or like, what the fuck, you know?
Great point.
I think it would have built up that tension more between them and the town's people.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's true. I mean, because you want to see, you know, you want to see like what kind of effect they would have just by existing on that same street as the little town, small town USA. You know what I mean?
Totally. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Good talk, Dale. I didn't think we were going to get much action out of that, actually, but that was, I think we did a good job. Yeah. I think we tore that sucker apart.
I think we did good. I think we did good for being unqualified, right, Chuck?
Yeah, not too bad.
I didn't even, when I was reading the wiki, like, I hadn't even put together that Peter Fonda was an Easy Rider and this was before Easy Rider. Like, I hadn't even thought about all that, but.
Yeah. Yeah. He like went on to become like the biker guy, basically.
Yeah. It made sense.
Yeah. I mean, he looked great. I wasn't particularly taken with his performance, but he looked the part.
His glasses were just cool.
And they had like, you know, they had like real Hell's Angels there too, I guess. And, you know, in a lot of the biker scenes.
Michael J. Pollard's character was named as Pygmy.
Oh.
Which was totally amazing. And like,
That was so
actual.
Wild to see his face. Like, he's just still.
I know.
He just still kind of seemed out of place. Like,
totally.
Cherubic. Kind of ugly mug. I don't know. He's so great. I love it. Oh, yeah. Man. I love that they had a medic too when they had health issues. Like,
I know, right?
Oh, call
he
medic.
Was even he was a bad guy.
Yeah,
he was robbing lobster pots off of other.
Yeah, it's robbing lobster pots.
Like he couldn't even be a good, you know, like he couldn't even just be just doing his job and helping these guys out. No. He was bad too.
Yeah, he had to be doing bad stuff. I did see and learn some slang. I saw a poster in their like headquarters bar that said, "We reserve the right to not serve ho daddies." I think it said. I was like, "What's a ho daddy?" I mean, I feel like I'd heard that before, but I never really knew. And I looked it up, and it means someone. It basically means like a poser. It was like a term for someone who pretended to be a surfer but couldn't really surf. So like you just like looked the part, but you couldn't really get out on the waves. You know, a ho daddy.
Huh. Wow.
It's funny.
That is funny.
All right, Dale.
Hmm.
All right.
Okay, well.
I should have had Nancy just sing one song. Imagine if there was just a scene where she gets up on a mic and sings a song. That would have been cool. Do you think her dad saw this movie and was like, "What are you doing, daughter?"
I couldn't stop thinking about that.
Yeah, I couldn't stop thinking about it either.
Like, what kind of hell would have been raised?
Yeah, at the Sinatra household.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I was enamored with thinking about, like, the stink that this would have caused and how, like, how many people Frank would have had beat up just for bad mouthing it just because he had to stick up for her.
Yeah, totally.
Even though it was such a problem to begin with.
You're talking about my daughter's movie?
Yeah. Like only he can be angry that it exists.
Yeah.
Woo. Crazy.
Dale, did we have any voicemails? Letters?
Well, let me tell you folks out there, just in case you don't have the contact information, 315-544-0966 is the official Bat and Spider hotline. And you can also email us anytime you want at batandspiderpod@gmail.com. With that being said, we actually don't have any correspondence this week, which is fine.
That's fine.
Because we probably went over it anyway. So
get over it.
We'll try to get over it. Folks, know that you can always email us and we'll read your letters live on air and your voicemails.
Oh yeah.
And Chuck, it's time to
pick a movie. Puts Chuck, the right? pressure on me. Quick. I was expecting a little bit of a cushion there. Here we are.
Mm-hmm.
So next week we're gonna watch Falling for Christmas, starring Lindsay Lohan. Just kidding. I actually do want to watch. I hear this is a good Christmas movie, Dale. Have you watched Falling for Christmas yet?
I actually walked in today, and my wife was watching it on the television as I walked in. So
did she even ask if you wanted to watch it?
No, she didn't. Wow.
She didn't ask me. I would have been there.
Yeah, so, you know.
I'm ready. I'm ready for Lohan to come back.
Now we need to have...
I'm ready for her to be the maven of Christmas movies. Every year we get a new Lohan Christmas movie.
Please. God, yes.
Doesn't that just sound great?
Yeah, it does sound great.
I'm going to pick a movie.
Chuck's going to pick a movie.
God, all these movies look so good. They really do. Dale, I have a movie on my watch list called Sharkansaw's Women's Prison Massacre. Sharkansaw's. Oh, it's got Tracy Lords in it. That's why.
Oh, that makes all the sense in the world. Yeah. Now. It sucks trying to find that diamond in the rough.
Okay, Dale, I got a pick. This is a film. This is by a filmmaker that I've wanted to do on the show for a while. I'm going to pick a movie called Underworld USA.
Underworld USA from 1961, Chuck.
That's right. It's directed by Sam Fuller.
I know that name.
Yeah. Big name. But he did a lot of work in cheap pictures, which is what we specialize in.
Oh, yeah, this guy.
And
why is he so familiar looking?
Oh, who? Cliff Robertson? He plays, he's Peter Parker. He's Ben Parker. Peter Parker's uncle. Uncle Ben. Right?
Peter Parker's uncle. Uncle Ben.
Is that who you're thinking of?
No. Oh, you know why? Sam Fuller. He's acted in some movies too.
Oh, has he?
Yeah. And he's in...
Oh, yeah. He has been in a lot of stuff.
He was in Return of Salem's Lot, for one.
Oh, my God. It's hilarious. God, we should have done that for this show.
I know. Sam Fuller, a sensational film that puts the finger on today's biggest business, crime. A bitter young man sets out to get back at the gangsters who murdered his father. Ooh, okay. Oh, yeah. Well, this is... fun. That looks fun.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. Starring Cliff Robertson, like I said, Uncle Ben. And yeah, it looks like it's going to be a rental.
Mm-hmm.
Available to rent everywhere. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. Underworld USA, 1961. Adding it to the official list.
This looks great.
Carving it into the stone. Can't take it back.
This looks great. Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited. He's someone I've seen a bunch of his movies, but not enough. I want to start chipping away at his oeuvre.
Yeah, it's time.
Let's do it.
I think it's time.
Yeah. All right, Dale.
And that's it. Folks, so that's it. Tune in next week for that movie, Underworld USA. And in the meantime, go to check out batandspider.com to join our Discord, get our contact info, and you can email us, your musings, your voicemails, things like that. And, what did you think about the Weird Al movie? Let us know. Chuck.
Yeah.
Have a good week. Love you.
Have a good week. I love you, buddy. Take care. Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.